Well, it's good to be back. We had a couple Sundays off anyway, and I hear you had some good preachers and great music and worship, and so I'm back. I hope you're glad. Having said that, today we're going to talk about first things first. As we end our summer season and get ready for the coming ministry year, get ready for a new season. First things first. You know, we were talking about, Cheryl and I, and our plan to go Boundary Waters canoeing, and it changed, so we went up to the North Shore and went hiking. We had some great experiences up there, and one evening, we decided the next morning we were going to get up and hike to the top of the highest peak in Minnesota, which is Eagle Mountain, which is only 15 miles away from the lowest point in Minnesota, which is Lake Superior, by which we were staying. And so we woke up in the morning, and it was a little cloudy, and as we got going, we got out to the trailhead and unpacked, and it started to drizzle, and then it started to rain a little, and we put on our jackets, and as all plans go, we had two jackets for three people, and then we started up the trail and realized that this is one of the most rocky trails I've ever hiked. I mean, rocks all over in the trails. And I was very concerned about it getting wet and about Cheryl slipping and falling and hurting her arm. And guess what? Cheryl never fell one time. I fell twice. And as we hiked up the mountain, we began to experience something that we hadn't planned for, and that was this amazing sound of the rain hitting all these leaves and vegetation out in the woods. And nobody else was around, imagine that. And it was just amazing to hear this rain and drizzle just coming down gently on the forest. And we really were just caught off guard by that amazing experience. And as we hiked up the mountain and got near the top, it stopped raining, and we got up there, and we had this beautiful view out over the landscape, and we could see the lakes and the trees across the valley. We sat down up on the mountain and began to share our lunch together, and as we were looking, we began to see something, kind of a phenomena that I still can't quite explain. But if you look back into the woods back there or over the horizon, it looks like there's little fires out there, little smoke coming up. And it was a vapor, water vapor or mist that was rising up out of the forest as it had cooled from the rain. And it was just coming up like little pillars of smoke all over the woods. And we just sat amazed at what we were witnessing. I'd never seen anything like that before. And we just enjoyed our time. We talked about this Faith 5 as an experience where families or anybody can get together and just share, you know, their highs and lows for the day. And after that trip, or after that day, each of us felt like this hike up the mountain in the rain was one of the highlights of our day. In fact, at the end of the week, we said probably one of the highlights of our trip. Certainly something that we had not planned for, but something that we experienced that was truly amazing. We can make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps. That's what the Bible tells us. This passage talks about the sovereignty of God. Big churchy word, kind of that means that God is in charge. You know, the Bible teaches us that only those plans that are approved by God will succeed. You know, the point is that there's this contrast between what we actually plan and then what actually happens. God determines that. So I think it's important to have a plan. How about you? Yeah, I think it's important for churches to have a plan as well. You know, and we have a plan here, and we need to continue to have a plan. We've had a simple plan over the past few years, and it has been keeping to the basics. You know, it's to keep working on being and making fully devoted followers of Jesus. And like Pastor Trinity said last week, who love God and love... Oh, you were here. Good. Glad to hear that. Who love God and love others and then go out and serve in our world. You know, that's the plan. And the details of each plan, they might change a little depending upon the season, depending on where we are. You know, it's kind of like, in our community, in the farming cycles. You know, in the spring, you know, we have a plan, right? But it includes getting the seeds in the ground and getting the soil worked. And in the summer, the plan is still to grow a crop, but it changes a little, right? We need to spray against weeds and pests. And then when the fall comes, the plan is to begin what? The harvest, right? You know, we always planned on having a harvest, but the methods change each season. And that's kind of like for us too. The plan remains. We plan, and then we work the plan. You know, we have youth pastor Greg Scaniel and his wife Miranda coming this week. It's a pretty exciting time. It's taken a lot of planning to get to this point. And I think it's a great plan. We believe that, you know, it's a great plan having them come and be part of the ministry here. But it's still crucial for us to realize that no matter how good our plan is, it's God's plan that will stand. You know, in the end, the Bible reminds us that many are the plans in a man's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails. So let me say that again, because it's really important. Many of us are capable of some awesome plans. Some of you folks have great capacity and strategies and projects. You're extremely capable of some amazing things. I mean, I've seen some of these amazing things. But as good as our plans are, they will only succeed if they're lined up with God's plan, with God's purpose. Because in the end, it's God's plan that will succeed. You ever feel that no matter how good your plans are, they don't work out? Did that ever happen to you? Of course it has. That's happened to all of us, right? We have some awesome plans and they just seem to fizzle. It doesn't work out. You know, why is that? Not all our plans work out. Why do you think? What's the reason? I mean, good plans. Maybe they're only our plans, and somehow we've not gotten in step with God's plan. So how do we get lined up with the Master's plan? You know, the plan that God has for us. You know, it'd be good to know, wouldn't it? I think so. So we're going to look at that today. You know, there are plans that do line up with God's plan for our lives, and when we incorporate those priorities into our planning process, we become more and more in line then with God's purpose. So we're going to call these priorities first things. And so when we're planning, we want to put first things where? Good. First things first, right? And so the first thing in making our plans is realizing that God's plan is for Jesus to become more and more and more at the center of our lives. And so the first thing is this more and more. He's to be the increasing priority in everything we do. Jesus is our purpose for life. He is the reason for our living. He's the number one plan in everything we do here in the church, but also in everything in our lives. So in the New Testament, in the first chapter, New Living Translation of John chapter 1, John the Baptist tells others that Jesus is his priority for everything. We read that, "This is the one I meant when I said, 'A man who comes after me has surpassed me.'" So he's talking about Jesus. "Because he was before me. I myself did not know him, but the reason I came baptizing with water was that he might be revealed to Israel. I have seen and testify that this is the Son of God." So like John the Baptist, we make our plans line up with God's plan when we plan for Jesus to keep becoming more and more the purpose of our lives. Now, here's what I mean by this. I don't just mean that, well, of course, we're Christians, so Jesus is the purpose of our lives. I mean that Jesus is becoming more and more and more the purpose in our lives, and sometimes unexpectedly. Sometimes we just find out that, you know, the things that Jesus is about, we just have this passion for in our own lives. And it's happening more and more. And we are kind of unaware how this all happened, but it just keeps on happening. That's God's plan for us. So this can catch us off guard. You know, this following Jesus and doing his ways, it becomes a far greater value than maybe it used to be in our lives. You know, when I was becoming an early follower of Jesus, I found myself praying with 30 other people in a church out loud. I mean, I never planned for that. It just kind of happened, but it was what I wanted to do, reluctantly, but you know, in my heart, I wanted to do it. So we realize that it's God's plan that will prevail. So we plan for Jesus to become more and more and more the purpose in our lives. You know, in the passage today that Dayton was reading, it seems like baptizing is getting out of hand there at the Jordan River. And John's disciples, they're not accepting this on multiple levels. They don't want Jesus to become more popular than their prophet John. You know, John's been working hard. He's been doing a lot, and they don't want Jesus to eclipse him and get all the glory. And so they come to Jesus and say to him, "Rabbi, the man you met on the other side of the Jordan, the one you identified as Messiah, is also baptizing, and everybody is going to him instead of coming to us." You know, it's interesting. John's disciples think that they're competing with Jesus. Isn't that interesting? And they're getting jealous. But John knows something that they haven't realized yet. John knows his purpose. And John's purpose is pointing people to Jesus, not to himself. He says it like this: "No one can receive anything unless God gives it from heaven. You yourselves know how plainly I told you, I am not the Messiah. I am only here to prepare the way for him." Now, it's kind of interesting, but you and I are not John the Baptist, right? I mean, I don't have a beard, I don't wear a shaggy coat and eat locusts. Maybe you do, but I don't. And so, you know, we're not John the Baptist, but we can learn from John here. He's clear on the purpose that God has chosen for him. It's to point others to Jesus. And we have to understand that that's our role too. Our role is not pointing people to Bethlehem Covenant Church. You know, our role is not pointing people to ourselves. Look at what great things are happening here. Look at us. Our purpose is to point Jesus, or to point people where? I gave you the answer. To Jesus, exactly. To point people to Jesus. And so we are asking this question as we're making our plans, as we're working out the things in our lives. We ask this question: is my life about pointing people to Jesus? How is Jesus the purpose in these plans? So when we include Jesus in our plans and he's becoming the purpose of our lives, then we begin to plan for Jesus becoming more and more the priority of our lives. Now, the difference is subtle here, but I think I'm going to try to explain what I mean. When we realize that we have a divine calling for Jesus becoming this purpose in our lives, then we begin to prioritize Jesus' mission in our lives. And this priority is in line with God's plan for us. The prophet Jeremiah, in the Old Testament, he puts it another way. He says, "I know, O Lord, that a man's life is not his own. It is not for a man to direct his steps." So what do you think about this? What does the prophet really mean here? He says, your life is not your own. Who says things like that today? Your life is not your own. You know, if our lives are not our own, then whose are they? Who does our life belong to? Well, it belongs to God. You and I exist for his purpose. And it's a good purpose. It really is. And that's going to come across for some of us kind of a blow to our ego. You know, we kind of hear over and over that I belong to no one, that I am my own person, that I command my destiny, I create my own life. Nope. That's not what the Bible says, is it? There's a master plan that's higher than our own authority, and it's the master's plan. And it includes you and me as followers of Jesus. John replied, "No one can receive anything unless God gives it from heaven." And the message is translated a little differently or read a little differently. It says this: it's not possible for a person to succeed, and I'm talking about eternal success, without heaven's help. So when we realize that we're not on our own, that these good things that we experience, whether they're in the church or in our lives, are given to us by God, it's not something we can do on our own, then we want to prioritize our plans in our lives so they line up with God's plan, or guess what? Nothing good is going to happen. Nothing good of eternal value is going to happen unless it's God's plan. Our plans line up when we're making Jesus our priority, because Jesus is God's priority. I want you to hold that thought. Jesus is God's priority. You know, remember in the passage, John is kind of being compared to Jesus. And he's saying there's no comparison here. I don't stand anywhere in relation to who Jesus is. He's far greater than I am, John's saying, because God hasn't given John this role of Messiah. He's only pointing the way. There's another picture we might have up here of a river that we visited. It's actually called Devil's Kettle. Kind of an interesting name, but it's on the North Shore. And as you look at that picture, you see two kind of separate waterfalls. Back behind there, the river is coming down this channel that's carved out in the rock. And it splits right before it comes over the falls. And half of the water comes over and splashes down into the bottom and continues on. And the other half goes into this big hole. It just disappears down into that hole. Now, it's kind of an interesting thing, and we were doing some research on this, and apparently they haven't really quite figured out where this water actually goes or how deep that hole is. They've done a little experiments along the way, and they're going to be doing one in 2018, so I'm interested to discover what they find out. But they do find out one thing, that the water flow above the river is the same as the water flow below the river. So at some point, it joins up again. So we're like the water, this half of the river that's going into the hole. There's a time and a place when we need to disappear as Jesus takes center stage. John the Baptist, he describes it in terms of a wedding. He says, it's the bridegroom who marries the bride, and the best man is simply glad to stand with him and hear his vows. Therefore, I am filled with joy at his success. He must become greater and greater, and I must become less and less. Jesus is a sign for the moment on the stage. We have to shift over to the sidelines. And the point is, for John, it's not about him. And the disciples need to learn it's not about them. And for you and I, we learn over and over, it's not about us. It's about Jesus, God's Son, God's priority. And we are moving over to let Jesus take center stage. That's God's plan. John Ortberg, he talks about an instance where a psychologist, Milton Rokic, he wrote a book called The Three Christs of Ypsilanti. He describes his attempts to treat three patients who are in the psychiatric hospital, and they suffer from delusions of grandeur. Each of them believes they are unique to humankind, that they've been called to save the world. In other words, they believe that they are the Messiah. It's called this traditional Messiah complex. And he says, this is in its pure form here. He found it difficult to break through, so he decided maybe if he got them together, maybe this kind of group experience would help them to realize who they are. It's kind of a messianic 12-step program, he called it. And so this led to some interesting conversations. He said one would claim, I'm the Messiah, the Son of God. I was sent here to save to the earth. And Rokic would ask, how do you know? And they would say, God told me. And then one of the other patients would counter, I never told you that. And every once in a while, there was a glimmer of reality, but it was very deeply ingrained. And it was pretty much the only progress that was made was putting these people together. It's a crazy idea, taking a group of deluded would-be messiahs and putting them into a community to see if they could be cured. But it has been done before. Luke tells us that a reasoning arose among them, the disciples, as to who should be the greatest of Jesus' followers. Who is the greatest? Are you? Am I? Jesus. You know, out on the church, changed the sign last night. And it talks a little bit about what's coming and our worship service. Do you notice anything that's not on there today? On every church sign like this, on the bottom there is Pastor Tim Shackleton or Pastor whoever it is. And so, I can understand why we would do that. I mean, churches have always done that, right? They always put the name of the pastor on the bottom. And that's cool. Or maybe they're happy with their pastor and they want to promote that about their church. But, you know, I removed it last night. I was thinking about Pastor Greg coming and, you know, it's hard to get all those letters on there, my name and another person's name. But the real reason for taking my name off, and I've thought about this for a while, is because I'm not the priority of the church. The church doesn't exist for me. In fact, the church doesn't exist for you. The church exists for Jesus. Jesus is our priority, and we don't want to intentionally point people away from Jesus, but to Jesus. We also don't want to unintentionally point Jesus somewhere other than to Jesus. And so my name just isn't that important when we compare it to Jesus. So we want to keep Jesus the priority. The Message translates a passage 35, the next one. He says, "The Father loves the Son extravagantly. He turned everything over to Him so He could give it away, a lavish distribution of gifts." Cheryl and I went, this picture of Cheryl, John, and I, you might have to back up. You know, we went, brought John with us on our vacation, and we really enjoyed that. And, you know, John's our youngest son, and he's in college. He got to spend the time with us. And we really love John. We love all our kids, but it was really great to spend this time with John. And we visited, we talked. And, you know, I really love my son, John. But as I reflect on John, I think, you know, my love for John, our love for John, is only a fraction of God the Father's love for His Son, Jesus. God loves His Son without measure, extravagantly, and He has given His Son everything. And that's how it works. This is the truth. God loves His Son, and His love flows to us through His Son. And so we want to keep first things first. The plan is that Jesus is the Savior of our lives and everyone's. You know, John the Baptist makes this very clear. In verse 36, he says, "That is why whoever accepts and trusts the Son gets in on everything, life complete and forever. Whoever believes in Jesus will have life eternally." Playwright Eugene O'Neill, he writes about life after death for Lazarus. In this play, he wrote about Lazarus after he was raised by Jesus. And near the beginning of the play, guests from Bethany are gathering around for a banquet in Lazarus' honor, and they're all desperate to hear what Lazarus has to say about his experience. And as they take their seats, one guest says, "The whole look of his face has changed. He's like a stranger from a far land. There's no longer any sorrow in his eyes. They must have forgotten sorrow in the grave." Another guest, one who had helped roll the tomb aside, recalls the scene after Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead in even more beautiful terms. "And then Lazarus knelt and kissed Jesus' feet, and both of them smiled. And Jesus blessed him and called him my brother and went away. And Lazarus, looking after him, began to laugh softly, like a man in love with God. Such a laugh I have never heard. It made my ears drunk. It was like wine. And though I was half dead with fright, I found myself laughing too." You know, even death cannot destroy God's plan for us, and it's a good plan, but it is a plan that we want to continue to hold in the forefront and share it, because the next verse reveals something that sometimes we don't want to talk about. And that is also why the person who avoids and distrusts the Son is in the dark and doesn't see life. All he experiences of God is darkness, and an angry darkness at that. Our priority is to reveal the Son to those who don't know Him, because their life eternally depends on it, as does ours. So we plan to keep the first things first. We keep sharing the gospel above all else because Jesus is our plan and Jesus is God's plan and God's plan never fails. So the plan is first things first. So let me close by sharing a story of the church doing just that, keeping first things first. In 1934, the Confessing Christian Church in Germany spoke out against the rise of what was called German Christianity, inspired by Nazism. Hitler was anxious to enlist the aid of the churches. He appealed to certain churchmen, patriotic Germans who were bishops and elders and pastors in a church, to work with him to better the lot of the German people. What began to emerge was the idea that it was the duty of the church to advance a political ideology. And much of the German church embraced this so-called German Christianity. But a group of confessing Christians in 1934 got together and authored what is known now as the Barmen Declaration. It argued with this premise. It said that the church and the gospel serves no one or nothing, that Christ is Lord over everything, and the church must never allow itself to be enlisted in the service of an ideology, no matter how good it may seem. They put it this way: we cannot put the word and the work of the Lord in the service of an arbitrary chosen desire, purposes, or plans. So as Jesus becomes more and more, and we become less and less, and he is lifted high here at Bethlehem Covenant Church, there is no plan for a follower of Jesus to practice racism or bigotry. None.